Tonight on the Scuttlebutt Radio Network, a very special presentation featuring the best of Tom's tirades.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Gather around, listeners, and you shall hear of politicians' stories of yesteryear. Or maybe they are not from years gone by. Listen closely. We report and you decide. For history is known to itself repeat. So on with the show without skipping a beat. Speaking of yesteryear, that's not too bad for an old guy, but it sets the stage for a brief bit of historical situational analysis that I found on the internet, and I thought it was pertinent to share with you tonight. Now, what old Top Cat wants you to do is listen close, close your eyes, and just listen for a minute to the following bit of reporting. Now, don't try to read too much into it. Just listen. Names have been removed to protect the innocent, but I think you can figure out who the president is. Just take a listen, and now no cheating. No cheating. Quote, the president adopted a strategy of rapid demobilization after the war. We've heard that before, huh? Mothballing ships and sending veterans home to a stagnant economy. Really? The reasons for this strategy, which persisted throughout the president's candidacy and his first term, were largely financial in order to fund his domestic spending programs. The president advocated a policy of defense program cuts for the U.S. Armed Forces as the war ended. The majority in Congress, anxious to enact numerous tax cuts, approved of the president's plan to hold the line on defense spending. In addition, the president's experience in the Senate left him certain that large sums were being wasted on the Pentagon. Editorial comment. Duh. Okay. Back to the quote. Impressed by U.S. advances in technological development, the president believed that they rendered conventional forces largely irrelevant to the modern battlefield. Well, troop reductions continued, adversely affecting U.S. conventional defense readiness. Furthermore, many Navy ships were sold to other countries or scrapped. The U.S. Army, faced with high turnover of experienced personnel, cut back on training exercises and eased recruitment standards. Usable equipment was scrapped or sold off, and ammunition stockpiles were cut. The Marine Corps, its budget slashed, was reduced to hoarding surplus inventories of weapons and equipment. Sound familiar? Got a certain Marxist in mind? Well, let me add the following from the same passage. Quote, the president proposed disbanding the Marine Corps entirely as part of the defense reorganization plan, but the idea was abandoned after a letter-writing campaign and the intervention of influential Marine veterans. And if you question my source, I found this on Wikipedia, which is kind of like WikiLeaks, which some serious people depend on. Gotcha, right? While the scenario sounds strikingly familiar to the world our nation faces today, the passage actually describes the late President Harry Truman. Of course, it was only after the invasion of South Korea by the North Koreans in 1950 that Truman sent significantly larger defense requests to Congress. Unfortunately, his short-sightedness led to a protracted war in Korea, a war that no one wanted or expected. The war resulted in over 125,000 U.S. dead and wounded. Now that's defense savings for you guys. Our nation just commemorated the 59th anniversary of the Armistice of the Korean War, known to many as the Forgotten War. Sandwiched between World War II and Vietnam, Korea was a war that no one wanted and which the politicians, such as Truman, left us ill-prepared to fight. Its repercussions are felt even today. Maybe we should listen to the echoes of the voices of the veterans of that conflict as we march into the brave new world post-Afghanistan and Iraq. Those men and women raised their collective hands and took an oath to defend this country from its enemies, just as the greatest generation had done before them. The question then, as it is now, does our political leadership possess the intestinal fortitude to make the right decisions and uphold their oath to defend this country? More importantly, if our leaders fail to make the right choices, are we as a people prepared to learn from the lessons of history and mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to ensure that, as Truman and Roosevelt promised, we will have lasting peace and security for all? For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton, and you are never forgotten.
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Load up, sir!
Load up!
understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Boom, shakalaka, boom, shakalaka, boom, shakalaka, boom!
May not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Well, fall is officially upon us, although you wouldn't know it by the continued heat. And along with the coming cooler temperatures and the incessant drumbeat of why Malzahn is still coaching at Auburn, and why Saban is slumming with Affleck. I stumbled over that one pretty strong. Comes the return of young skulls full of mush to the government-controlled school system for their next round of indoctrination by the union thugs running the system. Back in my day, that meant a steady dose of three R's: reading, writing, and arithmetic. I've always wondered about that last one, considering that arithmetic actually starts with an A, not an R. But who knows? These days, little Johnny, or Jenny, depending on which bathroom they want to use today, would probably get credit for trying, since we don't hold our students to anything remotely close to real standards. Apparently, we no longer hold our politicians or journalists to any real standards either, as is evident by the vitriol, political bias, and outright hatred that has been on display since President Trump was elected to office nearly 3 years ago. For anyone with a modicum of common sense, it is readily apparent that the majority of the media, mainstream, and social is no longer the fourth estate of government. They are now simply the voice of the Democratic Communist Party. And while it may be debatable as to which one sets the agenda for the other, it is apparent that they can no longer hold themselves out as objective in any way. Both have been working from the playbook of their own three R's in order to destroy the Trump presidency and decent people who have the temerity to associate with the duly elected president. But instead of the R's that we learned in school, or tried not in some cases, the Democratic Communist media cabal are following a different script: Russia, racist, and Rosemont. And while the outcome of the first two schemes to oust the president failed spectacularly, the third, Rosemont, may not be as familiar to the general public. But here's a clue. Think Hunter Biden and Ukraine. Wait. You mean you haven't heard the backstory leading up to the supposedly nefarious call from President Trump to his Ukrainian counterpart that has renewed Democrats' hopes for a Trump impeachment? Well, then let me fill you in. And before some of you ask why, Top Cat, are you jumping into this political maelstrom on SBN? Isn't that a bit political of you? Well, maybe. But the story of Hunter Biden starts well before the phone call. You see, Hunter and the Biden family in general is no stranger to using their wealth, their power, and their privileges to get a leg up on the smelly, deplorable Walmart voters who put Trump into office and continue to support him. But even the power of the vice president could not stop Hunter from blowing his chance to be the family's war hero after a brief stint in the U.S. Navy. According to reporting from USA Today back in 2014, the youngest son of Uncle Joe was discharged from the Navy only 1 month after his commissioning in the Naval Reserve. Dang. Okay, you might say that is not exactly. Except that Biden was discharged for testing positive for cocaine after a drug test in 2013, and the circumstances under which he made it into the Navy raised questions as well. Biden, an ensign, had been selected for commission as a reserve officer through the Direct Commission Officer Program in 2012. He was commissioned into the Navy Reserve Unit for Navy Public Affairs Support Element East in Norfolk, Virginia. Biden, who had no prior military experience, it seems he gets ahead where he has no experience, was one of six officers commissioned nationally for the billet. Applicants who cannot have passed their 42nd birthday at the time of commissioning are reviewed by a board that meets twice annually, and on average about 35 people apply. Hunter Biden sought and received a waiver to join the service because he was 44. He also received a second waiver because of a, quote, drug-related incident when he was a young man, end quote, as the Wall Street Journal reported and added that such waivers are not uncommon. So riddle me this. Blow boy Biden gets picked for one of six spots after 29 other candidates, and he has to pull the waiver card not once, but twice. I mean, come on. I know the Obama administration lowered standards to enter the military, but according to this, I was a better candidate than he was. So outside of the fact that Joe Biden undoubtedly used his office to place his unqualified son in a spot in our military that could have been filled by a more suitable candidate, why am I bringing this to you, the listeners, attention? Because the very same unqualified Biden was, at the time, working as a lawyer, lobbyist, and managing partner at the investment firm Rosemont Seneca Partners in Washington, That's the third R, which elevated him to be hired in May 2014 to join the board of Burisma Holdings, Ukraine's largest private oil and gas producer, and be in charge of its legal department. Granted, Blo Biden has no experience in oil and gas unless it is his father's hot air, and had no background in Ukraine. Additionally, his elevation came on the heels of the Russian invasion of the Ukraine in 2014, an act of war which the Obama administration did nothing to counter. So why would the Democratic communists in the House, the never-Trumpers, and their willing accomplices in the media jump on the phony whistleblower story of President Trump asking the Ukraine president to investigate Uncle Joe's interference into an investigation into his son's Ukrainian windfall? Because, as much as they would like to paint Trump as the obstructionist-in-chief, it is the Democratic communists and the media propaganda machine that are, in fact, interfering with this president's agenda to make America great again. And that includes not allowing those born with a silver spoon to smoke crack to enter our military. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton. By the way, have I mentioned I'm pissed off lately?
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Hold up, sir!
Hold up, sir! So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack! That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Another side of the break, my tirade on forgotten wars and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
July marks the 60th anniversary of the end of the Korean War, the war which was described by President Harry Truman as a police action because it was conducted under the auspices of the United Nations, has been referred to as the Forgotten War and the Unknown War in the United States because of the lack of attention it received back home, as well as being sandwiched between the global conflict of World War II, which preceded it, and the national upheaval brought about by the Vietnam War, which soon followed it. Although the war spanned only 3 years, it is estimated that over 1.2 million were killed on all sides, with 33,686 U.S. casualties and 8,176 U.S. service members missing in action, over 40,000 dead or missing. To put it in perspective, during the Vietnam War, which even today receives greater recognition than the Korean War, the casualty numbers were only up around 60,000, although the conflict spanned the course of nearly 20 years. Korea was, and to many at the time, nothing more than an extension of the tensions that arose at the end of World War II between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and was an unfortunate but inevitable occurrence. In fact, the war can be seen as a direct result of failed foreign policy in the aftermath of World War II, specifically the 1945 Potsdam Conference, at which the winning Allied powers divided up much of the world, including splitting Korea in two along the 38th parallel. A war-weary U.S. opted for this split in the hopes that the people of Korea would embrace concepts of freedom and democracy during the five-year period in which the U.S. and Soviet Unions would administer their separate spheres of influence. And while the first Soviet troops were reported south of the 38th parallel in September the same year, the hot war would begin 5 years later in June of 1950. Over the course of the next 3 years, the U.S. and Soviet Union would fight a proxy war of sorts, with each increasingly concerned about the escalation of the conflict in the new world of the atomic bomb. As such, the fighting in Korea devolved from the first attack style of World War II to the miserable trench warfare of World War I, and included some of our nation's most memorable battles, including the landing at Incheon, the fighting retreat of the Frozen Chosen, and the battles of Heartbreak Ridge and Porkchop Hill. Yet when the smoke cleared in July of 1953 with the Armistice Agreement, a divided Korea was restored along the 38th parallel, a Korean peninsula that still exists today. Throughout the U.S. this weekend, veterans and patriots, including those right here in the Mobile area, will gather together to remember and commemorate the sacrifices of all who served in the Forgotten War. They will share their stories of those that paid the ultimate price and saved their wounds with comrades who came home, Along the way, I am certain they hope that their stories will make an impression on a generation of Americans who likely cannot find Korea on a world map.
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
Wow. Any wonder why they make them compete in swimsuits? It is unfortunate that Korea is known as the Forgotten War, not only for the memories of those who served and sacrificed, but also for the lessons that we as a nation can learn from the circumstances leading up to the conflict. History shows us, as I mentioned earlier, that Korea was really a conflict controlled by the U.S. and Soviet Union, and one that was building for years. The Korean people, both North and South, largely wanted nothing more than to go on about their lives, much as they do today. And yet the superpowers found their way to the battlefield with devastating results for both the boots on the ground and the civilian population. Our leaders today and our population in general could learn from the lead-up and prosecution of the Korean War, especially in light of the ongoing conflict throughout the Middle East, most notably in Syria, where the president and his administration seem to be hunting for the right reason. Hell, any damn reason to join the conflict on the ground. Politics aside, this seems like a very bad idea, especially since the only side we have to support are the rebel forces, which consist largely of the damn Islamic terrorists such as the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda. Because the other side, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, is a dictator supported by Russia. As a note, we can see just how well our support in picking sides thus far in the Islamic revolutions in the Middle East has gone by looking at either Egypt or Libya. And yet, just this week, Deputy Dog himself, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Martin Dempsey, submitted a letter to Congress on the military options available should the president give the go-ahead to escalate the Syrian conflict into America's newest hot war. He did so after refusing to answer questions from senators concerning what advice he has given the president on Syria during his confirmation hearings earlier in the week. Hopefully, it won't take decades of deceit and thousands of dead Americans, as we did in Korea, before we find out exactly what advice Dempsey gave Obama, because we as a nation should not and cannot forget the sacrifices of those who fought for freedom in Korea, regardless of the outcome. And to make the mistake of involving ourselves in a Syrian conflict would be little less than desecrating their memories for the sake of appeasing powerful political posturing politicians. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Hold up, sir!
Understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Listeners to SBN will no doubt recall the great number of attempts, some successful, some not, to remove military and veterans' memorials from government buildings and property and even public parks under the grounds that the inclusion of a cross within the memorial somehow violated the rights of those who are easily offended. Most of these complaints come from anonymous citizens who are backed by the ultra-leftist Military Religious Freedom Foundation and its founder, Mikey Weinstein, who seems to believe that the Bible is more dangerous than a communist or Islamic jihadist with an AK-47. Anyway, while we have been covering these stories, we have also recommended actions that the rest of the citizens and true patriots can take in order to back their memorials. Case in point is a story that we first brought to you over a year ago in Knoxville, Iowa, where the city council voted to remove a memorial to fallen soldiers from a city park because an outside atheist group complained that the memorial featured a Christian cross. The silhouette display was paid for and constructed by the local Amvets Post 63. When the controversy first arose, their spokesman, Don Zuit, said, "Our original plan was to put this up when we got the money, and we just got the money." So with cash in hand, they began constructing the memorial. The Amvets promised that the official memorial would not be religious, stating, quote, "It'll be a true memorial to everybody, not just one. There's no religious connotation to it. There's no black, white, and green. No race, creed, color designation, no gender designation. It is pretty PC. He said, using the shortened term for politically correct. But while the city council was more than happy to vote to remove the monument, citing the cost of defending against the inevitable lawsuit, the town was almost universally unhappy with the decision. In the week before the city council vote, citizens had apparently warned the officials that if they voted to remove the display, their political careers were in jeopardy. Several citizens had set up a Facebook page called Stop the Insanity, urging local voters to vote two of the city council members out of office should they vote to remove the memorial. In a true show of peaceful protest, immediately after the council vote, some 2,000, check that out, 2,000 small white crosses were placed in front yards all over town in support of the memorial. As it happened, the day after the council voted to remove the display was Election Day, and much to the council members' dismay, the town rose up and voted them out of office, just as they'd warned they'd do. Both Councilmen Formanak and Berners were voted out of office. Councilman Roosbaum chose not to run for re-election and also left his seat behind. Cleaned the whole damn house out. Further, Formanak and viewers were decidedly defeated, with neither taking any more than 15% of the vote. By Election Day, the Facebook page was celebrating with the banner of We Did It. An attorney for the group who erected the silhouette display says that there wasn't anything illegal about it and that it was a shame that the city had caved into a single complainer. The Supreme Court just recently in the Mojave Desert Veterans Memorial case made it very clear that crosses, when they're part of a veterans memorial, depict the thousands of other crosses that mark American graves across the world, said Roger Barron of Liberty Institute. As our exalted leader, soon to be a footnote in history, Barack Hussein Obama mentioned, elections have consequences, and I can only hope that the small victory of the people of Knoxville, Iowa, will serve notice on those in government at all levels who have come to believe it is they who hold the power in this nation and not the people who elect them and to whom they should be internally accountable. I also believe that elections do have consequences, and more importantly, that the decisions that are made by our elected officials have consequences. And while I normally try to stay out of the dirty world of politics, I have to say that I am thankful for the outcome of this past election, from the national level to the local dog catcher. The election of Donald Trump upholds the wisdom of our founding fathers in creating the Electoral College, which guarantees equal representation of all states, both large and small, and which hopefully will relegate the Clintons to the dustbin of history. Hillary has shown her contempt for this country and its people on numerous occasions, and continues to do so even today, with her support for a phony and unnecessary call for a recount in key states, as well as supporting the calls for bound electors to unlawfully switch their votes in the Electoral College. More importantly, Hillary has shown a venomous contempt for our military and veterans, running guns for ISIS and abandoning our patriots in Benghazi. Her election would have undoubtedly meant progressive appointments to the Supreme Court, which would have left the average American the new slave on the government plantation. Fortunately, with the results of the 2016 election, we the people have shown that at least for the foreseeable future, we are the masters and they are the servants. And if you don't believe it, just ask the patriotic folks in Knoxville. They took back their city and never had to fire a shot. Good for them. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton. Although I bet they were more willing and able if needed.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on this Scuttlebutt Network.
On the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on Destined for the Dustbin. All that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
You're listening to a special New Year's Day presentation of the best of Tom's tirades on the Scuttlebutt Radio Network.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Well, it is that time of year again. The time when the big boy establishment types start to throw their weight around in their backyards and in front of any camera that they can get into focus. Many will attempt to block out the competition by using their size and strength to squeeze out their competitors before they can begin their run for greatness. It's also the time when the little guy hopes to land a spot in the big dance and pull the upset that will allow them to claim the ring and the title of Cinderella.
Many have to pull no punches along the way, trying to outdo the competition on camera and on the court. Of public opinion, they hope to survive long enough to join the ranks of those who can take the stage in the big dance and have an opportunity to stake a claim to the looniest of the left. That's right, while some of you may have thought that I was speaking of NCAA March Madness, I was actually speaking of the madness that has enveloped the once proud Democratic Party as it plows further into the abyss of communism via the path of democratic socialism. With a newfound celebrity of fellow travelers such as the barmaid economist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the anti-Semite Ilhan Omar, it seems that the only way to get ahead on the left is to go straight off the edge of sanity. And nowhere is that better seen than in the laughable number of candidates joining the field of communist candidates for president. One thing of note, as one communist, communist, after another throws their hat into the center ring of the circus is the trouble they may seem to have just getting out of the blocks without tripping over their own verbal baggage. Take Kirsten Gillibrand, for example, a darling of the progressives during the Obama administration with strong ties to the Clintons. I might add, her political star rose under the guise of mistreatment of women, starting with a non-existent epidemic of sexual assault in the military. She eventually moved on to target the austere body in which she resides, the Congress of the United States. In April 2018, the Democrat from New York urged Senate leaders to pass her bipartisan Congressional Harassment Reform Act. Gillibrand wrote in Fortune magazine, quote, "Congress has a sexual harassment problem, and it isn't taking it seriously. If we can't clean up our own act, how can anyone expect Congress to do the right thing for victims and survivors in the rest of the country? Congress has to do better. I believe that elected officials should be held to the highest ethical standard, not the lowest." Of course, this was at the height of the Me Too movement, and Gillibrand was trying her hardest to stake her claim as its leader. She did not fare too badly, and of course went on to harass Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh during his confirmation hearings, again scoring points with the loony left. Unfortunately for Gillibrand, as is the case with so many leftist politicians, activists, and actors, they want you to do as I say, not as I do. You see, while publicly positioning herself as a champion of the harassment victims, Gillibrand apparently allowed a serial harasser to torment her female staff. And when a woman on her staff risked her own career to report the abusive conduct, the staffer was belittled by her office and treated like an inconvenience. Gillibrand kept the harasser on her staff until it proved politically untenable for her to do so. Gillibrand is still pushing legislation, the Military Justice Improvement Act, which would remove the chain of command and make independent prosecutors rather than military commanders responsible for handling allegations of sexual misconduct in the military. The legislation aims to eliminate, quote, "the bias and the inherent conflicts of interest posed by the military chain of command's sole decision-making power." Yet, when faced with such allegations in her own office, she had no concern about bias and inherent conflicts of interest. She is no champion for women. She is a political opportunist, a charlatan, and a hypocrite. Her legislation, her campaign, and her legacy should be one of disgrace, and her star should be a shooting one disintegrating as it falls. Next up, Beto Mayo O'Rourke, the failed congressman from Texas whose biggest claim to fame is losing to the evil Ted Cruz in the last Senate race. Or maybe it is that O'Rourke, the son of an El Paso County judge, used daddy's position in his assumed white privilege to skirt a DUI conviction in which he fled the scene a la Ted Kennedy. Or maybe it is the fact that he proudly claims that Allah, the high priest of the progressive priesthood, Hussein Obama. They are both equally untested and unqualified to hold office. But such is the hubris of those on the left. You can be a loser, a failed candidate, or in Bill Clinton's case, a serial abuser of women, but the cult of victimhood only lifts you up as high as their savior. Of course, O'Rourke had spewed no limit of garbage from his pie hole during his public life. Unfortunately for Beta Male, his comments compared our greatest generation veterans with the force that is global warming. Oops, global cooling. Oops, climate change. Got to get the propaganda right. Have shown his utter disrespect for this nation and our veterans. He somehow equates mobs marching to stop cow farts with courageous young men storming beaches in a hail of gunfire to beat back Nazis during World War II. That he is lauded by those on the left as an indication of just how precarious is the state of our nation. However, the fact that his ignorance and disrespect for our veterans, along with the hypocrisy of those such as Gillibrand and her attempts to destroy our military readiness, are on display for everyone to see is encouraging. For the curtain has been pulled back, and everyone can now see that the Democratic Party of today is the anti-American Communist Party of tomorrow, destined for the dustbin of history. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Hold up, sir!
Hold up, sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
You're listening to a special New Year's Day presentation of the best of Tom's tirades on the Scuttlebutt Radio Network.
Following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Gather around, listeners, and you shall hear of politicians' stories of yesteryear. Or maybe they are not from years gone by. Listen closely. We report, and you decide. For history is known to itself repeat. So on with the show without skipping a beat. Speaking of yesteryear, that's not too bad for an old guy, but it sets the stage for a brief bit of historical situational analysis that I found on the internet, and I thought it was pertinent to share with you tonight. Now, what old Top Cat wants you to do is listen close, close your eyes, and just listen for a minute to the following bit of reporting. Now, don't try to read too much into it. Just listen. Names have been removed to protect the innocent, but I think you can figure out who the president is. Just take a listen, and now no cheating, no cheating. Quote, the president adopted a strategy of rapid demobilization after the war. We've heard that before, huh? Mothballing ships and sending veterans home to a stagnant economy. Really? The reasons for this strategy, which persisted throughout the president's candidacy and his first term, were largely financial. In order to fund his domestic spending programs, the president advocated a policy of defense program cuts for the U.S. Armed Forces as the war ended. The majority in Congress, anxious to enact numerous tax cuts, approved of the president's plan to hold the line on defense spending. In addition, the president's experience in the Senate left him certain that large sums were being wasted on the Pentagon. Editorial comment. Duh. Okay. Back to the quote. Impressed by U.S. advances in technological development, the president believed that they rendered conventional forces largely irrelevant to the modern battlefield. Well, troop reductions continued, adversely affecting U.S. conventional defense readiness. Furthermore, many Navy ships were sold to other countries or scrapped. The U.S. Army, faced with high turnover of experienced personnel, cut back on training exercises and eased recruitment standards. Usable equipment was scrapped or sold off, and ammunition stockpiles were cut. The Marine Corps, its budget slash, was reduced to hoarding surplus inventories of weapons and equipment. Sound familiar? Got a certain Marxist in mind? Well, let me add the following from the same passage. Quote, the president proposed disbanding the Marine Corps entirely as part of the defense reorganization plan, but the idea was abandoned after a letter-writing campaign and the intervention of influential Marine veterans. And if you question my source, I found this on Wikipedia, which is kind of like WikiLeaks, which some serious people depend on. Hey, gotcha, right? While the scenario sounds strikingly familiar to the world our nation faces today, the passage actually describes the late President Harry Truman. Of course, it was only after the invasion of South Korea by the North Koreans in 1950 that Truman sent significantly larger defense requests to Congress. Unfortunately, his short-sightedness led to a protracted war in Korea, a war that no one wanted or expected. The war resulted in over 125,000 U.S. dead and wounded. Now that's defense savings for you guys. Our nation just commemorated the 59th anniversary of the Armistice of the Korean War, known to many as the Forgotten War. Sandwiched between World War II and Vietnam, Korea was a war that no one wanted and which the politicians such as Truman left us ill-prepared to fight. Its repercussions are felt even today. Maybe we should listen to the echoes of the voices of the veterans of that conflict as we march into the brave new world post-Afghanistan and Iraq.
Those men and women raised their collective hands and took an oath to defend this country from its enemies, just as the greatest generation had done before them. The question then, as it is now, does our political leadership possess the intestinal fortitude to make the right decisions and uphold their oath to defend this country? More importantly, if our leaders fail to make the right choices, are we as a people prepared to learn from the lessons of history and mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to ensure that, as Truman and Roosevelt promised, we will have lasting peace and security for all? For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton, and you are never forgotten.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Pull up, sir!
Understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
You're listening to a special New Year's Day presentation of the best of Tom's tirades on the Scuttlebutt Radio Network. You're listening to a special New Year's Day presentation of the best of Tom's tirades on the Scuttlebutt Radio Network.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God.
Those words of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, uttered over 70 years ago before a Congress and a nation in shock, still stir the hearts of today's patriots. He delivered the words to a nation which only hours before had rested peacefully in a world overcome with the tragedies of war, and to a world anxious to discover if the United States would officially enter the conflict known as World War II. Within days, the U.S. would be fully embroiled in the war, with most of the nations holding in the Pacific having succumbed to the onslaught of the forces of the Empire of Japan, and Germany and Italy joining their Japanese ally in declaring war on the U.S. The devastating effects of the swift-moving Japanese attack would be felt by many Americans, both civilian and military, as they were left to their own devices by a nation caught with its pants down, guys. Young men in uniform were abandoned by a government unable to muster a timely response to the attack at Pearl Harbor and beyond. Many, like Glenn Fraser, held out hope that the promised reinforcements, resupply, or rescue might come only to be swept up by the Japanese juggernaut and cast into the hell that befell the survivors of the Bataan Death March. His story and those of his fellow survivors should be mandatory reading for every student in this nation in order that future generations understand the sacrifice that these men made for this nation. A nation, I'll remind you, that abandoned them on foreign lands and cost countless thousands of lives in the process. However, it is just as important to recognize that through all of his suffering, Lenin's contemporaries never lost their love for this country or their belief that it is the greatest nation on earth. And so this year, over 70 years since the Japanese attack, we as a nation will again remember Pearl Harbor. Remember Pearl Harbor. Such rallying cries are not unique in our history. One can imagine the founding fathers in Philadelphia, during the heated debates over the Declaration of Independence, often implored the assembled delegates to remember Concord and Lexington to advance their cause, or generations to come using Remember the Alamo as a call to persevere against unsurmountable odds. While never romanticizing in film as the Alamo or Pearl Harbor would later be by Hollywood, the sinking of the USS Maine in Havana Harbor would stir public sentiment against Spain, which then owned Cuba, creating the Remember the Maine slogan and pressuring President William McKinley to ask Congress to declare war and bring the U.S. into the Spanish-American War. Some might argue that had the outcome and popularity of the Vietnam War been different, we might be regaling with cries of Remember the Maddox as a rallying cry for the Vietnam War. Although it might be more appropriate to remember the Mayaguez. Just Google it, guys. Or more recently, we were told never forget 9-1-1. Or 9-11, however the hell you want to say it. While our troops were spurred on by the Flight 93's Let's Roll, and that wasn't Alabama, guys, and a president that knew what it meant to defeat our enemies.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on. We got the force necessary to deal with the security situation.
Now, undoubtedly, there are those that will bitch and moan and gnash their teeth about how such slogans are nothing more than nationalistic, jingoistic, simplistic propaganda meant to feed the most base instincts of our bloodlusting, imperialistic society. Damn, what a sentence. For you, I would simply say, how's that Hope and Change campaign slogan playing out for you, buddy?
Because while remembering Pearl Harbor 75 years later
may seem like an act of folly for a generation on the brink of extinction, each of these events and those corresponding slogans created a common ground and point of reference for a nation in need. Just as the Stars and Stripes gave heart to troops around the world in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor and to millions throughout the world seeking freedom, even till today, those slogans brought focus during the chaos of combat and clarity during the isolation of internment in foreign lands.
One wonders how history will judge the current administration,
which fails to take time to remember so many of the pivotal dates in our nation's history, will pause long enough to commemorate what happened at Pearl Harbor, or at least attempt to learn from the lessons of that tragic day. For not only were we caught flat-footed on that Sunday morning, we had allowed ourselves to be lulled into a false sense of security, that negotiations with our enemies might stop the inevitable march to war. FDR said it best himself.
Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves.
At some point, we have to remember that there is evil in this world. Remember that there are people and nations that wish to do us harm. Remember that they will stop at nothing to see us in chains with our freedoms in tatters, our history rewritten and our culture transformed. And so, yes, it is the right and proper thing to do when we remember those who have gone before. From Concord to the Alamo, from Pearl Harbor to the Twin Towers.
We must remember the sacrifices of those who have gone before in order that future generations embrace the freedom that was so dearly paid for by our patriots.
No, the greatest infamy would be that we let their flame be extinguished by those more concerned with poll numbers than patriotism. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton, a true patriot and pork-eating crusader.
Where's your drill, Sergeant, man?
Sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
This has been a special presentation of the best of Tom's tirades on the Scuttlebutt Radio Network. Cal and Tom will be back with a brand new show next week on FM Talk 106.5.